Hey, what's going on, Dutch Nation? Today on the podcast, we've got legacy franchisee of Wenatchee, Washington, Mr. Jimmy Crocker. And let me tell you, Jimmy, he's probably got more self-discipline than any human I know. Grew up in the small town of Selma, Oregon, in Cave Junction, about 30 miles outside of Grants Pass. Worked for Dutch and GP before really developing a love for the company, working for Kurt Hugo in Gresham. And the man shredded. Good person to listen to when it comes to physical health, which is a big part of why we had him on as well. January, New Year's resolution, goals, things of that nature. So sit back, relax, enjoy the Jimmy Crocker podcast. Well, hey, man, thanks for joining us on the phone.
Yeah, bro, are we rolling?
We're rolling.
I fell asleep waiting.
No. Sorry, dude.
I'm not kidding. I really did. I was like nervous in the beginning, and then I was like, okay, just relax and breathe. And then that breathing kind of got me into a deep meditative state.
That's some quality breathing. That's like Tony Robbins breathing right there. Kickstarting it, how we like to get into it, is what was the first drink you were drinking at DB? And then what are you drinking now?
Weirdly enough, bro, I didn't drink coffee at all. Not that I didn't like it. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever told me that it was a drug that could make me happy and energetic. How could my parents leave that out? They're just sucking down this liquid that helps them get through the day with a smile, right, and they don't tell me about it.
Right. Yeah.
I had this crush on this girl.
Yeah. Likely story.
She worked at the coffee house. You know her. Used to be Kim Darpino, now Kim Bailey. So obviously I was there just to see her because I don't drink coffee. So I was just like, oh, Kim works. And I just wanted to stare at her. She's beautiful.
Sure.
So I go there. She's like, let me make you something. And I'm like, I don't drink coffee. And she's like, oh, I know what you want. So she made me a chocolate mac hot chocolate, but she had a special way to make it.
Oh.
Where she put the whipped cream on the bottom, then poured the Mac on top of the whipped cream, and then the steamed chocolate milk. And I was just like, come on. Like, between her and the hot chocolate, I'm like, this is the greatest place on earth. That was my first drink. Loved it. And I drink black Americanos now. But the way that I got involved with Dutch, I think Brant probably came out to one of our CJ parties.
Uh-huh.
I knew a little bit enough about him to where I knew where he worked. I needed a job. To this point, I only worked at grocery store delis. I can always nail a job at a grocery store deli, bro. They love me. I visited the Agnes store where Brant managed.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dane was leaving as I was coming,
mm-hmm,
with his crazy sunglasses. Looked like he was like 25 when he was like 40.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who's that crazy guy? Like, he was like looking at me just with this big old grin, and he just walks off like smiling and shaking his head. And I didn't put it together till later that was the owner. And I'm trying to get a job in his business that I don't even deserve to be at. But anyways, for some reason that really I didn't deserve, Brant gave me a job.
We talked to Brant. He basically just said, you know, that he took you in and worked tireless hours to train you as his graveyard guy, but then you bailed on him to work at the coffee house.
Yeah.
And, can we hear your side of the story?
Yeah, let's clear the air.
Bro, all that needs to be said, that was the one 24-hour store, and I was working graveyard shift, and I was driving in and home from Selma. So, of course, the first opportunity that came about that was not working graveyard shift, I was like dying to take it.
Sounds like it was Ryan Eaton, Big E, swooped you up and took you in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was cute girl Kim that you were crushing on still working there too?
No, that was probably 3 years later.
Okay. Because I was like, that would make a lot more sense. Like, forgivable to just abandon.
No, stop
Brant.
It makes sense, bro. Graveyard shift is hard.
Brant was devastated. He told us that.
Well, he didn't act devastated when I was leaving. I'm pretty sure he was stoked to see me go. I made him look bad with all my healthy meals and stuff that I was packing.
Yeah. So I want to talk about that, because also around this time, you were modeling.
You know that's not true. Everybody brings up this big joke about me being a model, but there's a big difference between a guy who wants to model and pays money to try to model and somebody who actually gets a modeling gig.
Right. Okay? Right.
And I was the former.
Oh, gosh.
That was a long time ago, man. I'm not that vain anymore.
So, like, at what point were you thinking, hey, I want to make Dutch a long-term career goal, because you're the franchisee up in Wenatchee, Washington. So what were some pivotal steps you took to get to that point and a reality in your mind? Like, Dutch Bros is going to be my life.
It wasn't in Grant's path. When I was at the coffee house, it was still just a job. And that's a bummer to say. I honestly was like that metaphor that Trav uses where you're on the river and are you in a canoe? Are you in a raft? You have paddles. I literally was, by my own choice, just floating, bro. Like, on an inner tube. I was just tubing.
Let the current dictate it.
But I think a lot of people are here and it's a really the wrong mindset. But it's, I wonder what I'm going to become. I wonder what career I'm going to have or what my family life is going to be like. Now, as I think about it, it's the weirdest thing, because it's like, do you really just keep waiting to figure out like where you land?
Yeah.
I hate the fact that I wasn't actively thinking about what I wanted to do and how I was going to pursue it and how it affected my day to day. It wasn't like putting in the work so that you could experience greatness later. It was just, this is a job. Some of my biggest challenges in Grant's past were high expectations from customers that I could never live up to. Mm. I'm not saying it's other people's problem.
Yeah.
It was my problem. But inside, what I was feeling was that this was never going to be a place where I was the guy who people came to see. People were coming there and they're like, where's this person? So I got that question a lot.
Yeah. You know,
where's so-and-so? I want them to make my drink. Whether I knew it or not, I dreamed of being that person that people came in for, right?
Yeah.
I was taking classes at RTC, but I got this drive to just push to use the financial aid that my situation had allowed me, coming from 7 kids and a super poor family, that I'm just like, dude, I'm going to dive in and just get full financial aid and go wherever I want to go.
Yeah.
So I got all set up to go to University of Portland. It's important to note that while I was at the coffee house is when I met my wife, Danielle.
Oh.
So Danielle met me at that time where I was like bulking up. What was weird about being in there is that when you're like 21, 22, and everybody who's coming in there is like 16, 17.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
It doesn't seem that much older, but when you've been out of high school for like 3 years, you feel like these people are kids.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
But I had a buddy who worked with me there that was younger, and we hung out quite a bit. And then he was hanging out with Danielle and her friend, Ashley. And then we ended up all hanging out together. So then it was like a little bit more personal outside of the Dutch Bros setting. It's not weird when you like have a deeper conversation with somebody, you can just talk about things that aren't so surface level.
Sure.
And man, was I ever insanely impressed with the caliber of character from Danielle.
Yeah.
It made me see her in an entirely different way by having Danielle as somebody who loved me as much as she did and who I could see loving my kids as much as she would. I couldn't let her go. I had to make it happen.
Yeah.
We both moved to Portland at the same time. So how I got back to Dutch Bros was I dropped out of school right away because I realized it wasn't what my head, my heart was really desiring.
Sure.
And I wasn't finding the fulfillment that I thought I might. Mm-hmm. And there was one Dutch Bros in all of Portland, 162nd and Stark in Gresham. And I was literally 2 minutes from there. And that was Kurt Hugo's store. So I started working there, and little did I know how easy it would be to get a job when you're in an area that only has one Dutch Bros. And they never talk to anyone that says, yeah, I just came from Grants Pass and I worked with Dutch Bros down there for a year or so. They're like,
oh, you're okay, hired.
Well, you just made your first shift. So you're like late already. So it was like right in, and it just felt so good. But dude, here was the thing, is that coming into Gresham and not having anyone experience the kind of customer service that I had been used to in Grants Pass, to say nothing of like that they were doing anything wrong, but the kind of culture that develops with the amount of employees and stores and customers that you have in Grants Pass, it's hard to expect the same kind of customer service when you're talking about a place way up in Gresham. So when I approached my coworkers and my customers in Gresham with what I was expected of in Grants Pass, it was noticed right away. People were like, where's Jimmy? I like Jimmy. Who's the new guy? All this stuff. And it was like,
you arrived.
I got what I wanted. I was rolling. And then there's only so many tools and drinks that you can make But once you get really good at that, that just comes natural. And then when somebody comes to the window, you get this confidence of like, whatever they ask for, I can handle it.
Yeah.
Like your fear kind of goes away because all they care about is that they get the drink that they want. They're not coming there to see you. Sometimes they are, but for me at that point, at least they weren't, it was just, they're coming for the drink. So anything they got extra was just extra. It allowed me to just be myself, be silly, because I was so confident in the repetitions that we're having conversations and stuff while I'm making their drinks. And then, you know, every once in a while, I'll throw a joke in or a little silly move or a silly look. But I knew that, like, it didn't matter because I was just going to pass them a drink and they were going to leave.
Right.
So I was never worried about the awkward moments that sometimes come when you reveal yourself and who you really are. Mm-hmm. But the more that I did and revealed who I was, people loved who I was.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
And at that point, the only people that knew it were my family and close friends that I could be funny or silly or all these things. Mm-hmm. But so I started to kind of wear that and people appreciated that. And then I could be it more often. And then I just really found myself in that small space. Mm-hmm. And then I could deliver it no matter where I was because I was comfortable and confident in who I was at that point. As far as my personality goes, I know for sure that I wouldn't be the same person today if I didn't get to have that experience at Dutch Bros.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know where else I would have found it.
People respond so well to someone that's just being genuine. You had to be you when you showed up. Then it's like, where's Jimmy? I want him to make my drink.
It's at that point that I really loved what I did.
Awesome.
And that it stopped being like a job and it started to be like, this is seriously fun. Then we're talking about like me getting close to Mary and Danielle at that point. Then I'm starting to think about my future. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, dude, if I could do this forever, then oh my gosh.
Sure.
And working for a shop that's owned by one guy that I actually get to talk to. I even like worked with him a little bit in the beginning because we had like 7 employees.
Sure. Yeah.
So he said, you should open a Dutch Bros. And I was like, what are you talking about, Kurt?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't go to school for business. Like what? I never had a business anywhere else. Like, what do you mean? Like you should open a Dutch Bros. And he's like, well, you can do it. I mean, I see who you are and how you work and your passion. You could do this if you wanted to. And I was like, whoa. So that was the seed that started to set the stage for like really actually like visualizing what it could be like. And then that ownership perspective that you get when you feel like you're going to do something long-term to where even if it's not actually yours, you're like, I'm going to be doing this for the foreseeable future, if not forever. So why don't I hone my skills? And at the same time, you're like doing the best you can do for the person that you're working for.
Yeah.
So it's the best of both worlds because you're getting better and you can't get better unless you give all you got. And that means like, it doesn't just cut off when your shift is over. It's like, well, what do I need to do? Not what do I have to do? Not just like, what's the bare minimum? Mm-hmm. So I started to think that way. And then we started, you know, conversations with Brian and Trav about what it would look like to franchise and probably the best opportunity looked like moving back to GP and kind of like trying to move up the leadership ladders and go to meetings and like just get a little crash course before you actually move somewhere and open something. So that's what we did. Moved back home, pregnant. So we got married while we were there. And moved back to Grants Pass before we had our first son, Abram, and moved into my wife's parents' back house. We had our baby. I started working at shopping center before it was remodeled. Danielle was working pregnant at, what's that tiny little shop that used to be Mike's Coffee?
A-Town? Allen Creek?
Yep, A-Town. Yep, yep, yeah, Allen Creek. So I became assistant manager of shopping center. From there, I kind of got the taste of leadership, not only in the shop and like how to lead crew and be responsible and have some tough conversations and stuff like that, but also what HQ is like and what it's like to hear like the speeches from Trav on the way things should be in the stand and some of the stuff that we don't hear about as baristas when you hear about as managers and assistants, hugely advantageous for me, especially considering I was moving so far away. I needed that cultural connection with all those people that were there so that when I needed to reach out, I could reach out because I knew them personally. That was a couple of years and then we moved to Wenatchee.
Yeah. What put Wenatchee on the map? Had you been out there before?
Dude, no. What happened was we actually signed the franchise agreement for Elk Grove. So we were going to be the Elk Grove franchise.
Oh, no way.
Wow.
Yeah. Kyle, man. He swooped in.
I know, bro. We had a realtor down there and we lived there for like 6 months. Really exciting. We loved the area. That was our top pick out of anywhere, was Elk Grove. But we just couldn't get a site to materialize. One of the big reasons is because we weren't seeing the volume back then to warrant the cost down there, because sure. It was very expensive.
Yeah.
So the sites that were actually available based on our financial criteria were much more limited than where Kyle was when he came into it.
Was this like 07 or something?
That would have been like 06.
Yeah. So just Dutch Bros as a brand wasn't that known yet outside of Oregon.
Or no. You could see as our volume increased, our abilities to get into some of these leases and purchases just became all the more feasible. And then you get these amazing sites like where KG's at with his first store. I mean, that site was there, mm-hmm. but it would have never come up on the radar at the price point that was at. You know what I mean?
Right. If you're envisioning just a handful of sales a day, we'll never totally. Afford it. Yeah.
So then it was just kind of getting discouraging. For me, I was just kind of like, well, you know, we're in it for the long haul. We'll figure out a spot. It could take a year, whatever.
Sure.
Brian was just like, maybe you should look somewhere else. And so we started looking elsewhere. And my main criteria was closer to home and not rainy and wet. Mm. I really wanted to just kind of get away from the rain if I could. So Brian was like, you should check out Washington. And I was like, bro, no, I'm not
going
to Washington.
Did you just hear what I said, Brian?
I'm getting away from the rain. Yeah. And he's like, Jimmy, there's a whole side of the state that is actually a desert. And right. I'm like, huh.
Snow.
So I was talking to a lot of my customers. I would tell them I'm going to start looking in Washington State. And you wouldn't believe how many people 10 hours away said, if you're going to check out Washington, you've got to check out Wenatchee.
Yeah.
And then like eventually I just heard it too often that I had to look it up, and it was like, well, that's not that small, I guess. I mean, yeah. You could definitely open some shops there.
It's like Grants Pass or a little bigger.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think that was one of the draws, honestly, was mm-hmm. that it was so similar to Grants Pass.
Had that
it was
home like, feel. Well,
yeah. I know it's 10 hours away, but it could still feel like home. So we put together this trip of like checking out all these different spots. And when we got to Wenatchee, the weather was pretty gnarly, like it is right now. Like it was snow all over the ground and stuff, but the cars were just like bustling, man. It was ripping. And there was drive-through coffee, and it was like, dang, dude, you could definitely open a business in this town. If there's one time when it's going to shut down, it's when there's snow everywhere. Mm-hmm. And it is definitely ain't shut down right now. So it felt good to be there. I could feel the energy and the potential. At that point, we were just like, dude, with all that's been said about this place, dude, let's just run with this. Mm-hmm. So we got a hold of a realtor, and like within 2 weeks, we had a site, and that's our first shop. Right.
Wow.
There.
We moved, amazing.
Like, we moved a year later. So the first spot that we looked at was the spot that was our first shop.
Yeah.
Awesome. We moved there with our first son being 6 months old.
Bam. So kind of our theme this month, with it being January and New Year's resolutions, goals, Dutch Bros became a long-term goal for you career-wise, and you nailed it. But also, you are in really good shape and been very disciplined in your health and your workouts and your diet. So that's a lot of times somebody's big goal for the new year is, I want to lose weight, or I want to work out, or I want to eat better. It can be totally overwhelming. So what are maybe like some tangible steps that you could share with our people right now that want to get in better shape?
My goal, Jimmy, this year is to get fit. So help me.
Let's do it. We'll have to talk other than this conversation, Shane. I think I don't want to talk about that unless I talk about why I became that way with fitness and nutrition, because
please do.
For me, it's not vanity anymore. If it was, I couldn't allow myself to do it. Mm-hmm. So where this whole discipline thing came from, where I was working at the coffee house, I started to be aware of who I was, and I started to not like certain things about myself and to desire to be a certain person. And that meant some pretty disciplined changes in habits and lifestyle that I couldn't let go of. So I would have this vision of who I wanted to be, and then I would fail myself, you know, and I hated that. So it was this duplicity that I didn't appreciate in myself. It became very clear that I was two different people at times, and I really didn't like that. And none of us should, right? I didn't like it so much that I put massive effort into becoming the same person all the time. And that's a lifelong battle, right? We do stuff and we're like, dude, I wish I wouldn't have done that. But what I wasn't willing to do was just say, it's okay. Nobody's perfect. I'm good just the way I am. Yeah. I'm just going to live in that. Nobody else knew about it. but it was these battles that were going on inside of me that was such a struggle. That constant vigilance was so important to overcome these habits and challenges that it made me into a freaking willpower beast.
Yeah. Did you actually like physically say it like almost like a mantra or anything like that?
It was all internal.
Okay.
It was just the battle. And the proof was whether I could do what I wanted to do or whether I could not do what I didn't want to do. That was the proof. If I did, awesome. I felt great about myself. I was growing, achieving, and progressing. If I didn't, I was failing and I hated it. So it wasn't like, I'm going to try harder tomorrow. It was like, what the hell happened this time to where I blew it?
Right.
Where along the line of me desiring so badly to not do this, how was it even possible that I did it anyway?
Mm-hmm.
And like drawing that back between dozens of failures and finding and identifying where the failure started to happen and where it actually switches from, I don't want this to I do.
Yeah.
And narrowing that down and like being so vigilant about what you have to be careful for and your weaknesses daily, mm-hmm. that you were just so ready for it. Whatever grace I was receiving allowed for me to accomplish things that many people aren't. So that was really where my discipline came from. When I reapproached working out eventually, because I went through this stage where I was, bro, I got 4 kids and I've got 3 businesses.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
There wasn't a whole lot of time for me to think about what else could I be doing? Mm-hmm. It wasn't like that for a long time.
Yeah.
But when it ended up being to where I did have the time, oh shit, bro. I was so ready. Yeah. I was so ready. And not only that, but here's the thing where it really paid off is that all of my internal struggles up to this point were really visible to no one. I mean, they can be perceived through character and personality, mm-hmm. but it's not visible, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So when I started developing a discipline with my nutrition and working out, bro, I could look in the mirror and I could see my success.
Good. Sure, yeah. And obviously everyone around.
It was tangible. I could see it. Mm-hmm. All the other stuff, I can't look in the mirror and see how much I developed with my will, with mm-hmm. my humility. You can't see it. Yeah. I knew it was happening and it was a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. And I knew I was still working on it. It will never end. But what made me so obsessed with fitness and nutrition is because I could see it daily.
Mm-hmm.
And it was motivation daily to keep doing it. And if you told me I sucked at it, I could take my shirt off and prove it.
Yeah.
Because I don't suck at it. You know what I mean? If I'm telling you about fitness and nutrition, you can listen. It wouldn't be visible if I wasn't living it. And that's not something that I'm like trying to gloat about, but it's just reality, man.
Yeah.
I mean, if somebody's good at something, you listen to them about it. And especially if it's visible within their person, dude, talk to the humble person about being humble.
Yeah.
For real.
Right. So, I mean, ultimately everybody kind of has this internal voice. Unfortunately, it seems like it does take us to get to sort of a breaking point. I don't want to go necessarily as dramatic as like rock bottom, but a little bit to finally take that time to be like, okay, I know me and what are these things I'm ignoring that I know I should be better at? And it sounds like you just took that time to finally really have those conversations with yourself.
Whether it's something that everybody does that they shouldn't do or something that nobody does that they should. I wasn't willing to accept that because of that, I was any less responsible for making it real in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I just wasn't willing to go there. Just go along with the crowd, man. Hey, that's too hard.
Yeah.
You don't have to change. Mm-hmm. Hey, man, nobody's perfect.
Yeah.
That's such BS. All you're talking about is the next good choice.
Yeah.
And small choices are very easy. Mm-hmm. But what we're telling ourselves is, I had a really good morning. Now it's time to cheat. Or I was good last week. You know what I mean? It's like, no, it's actually possible to make every good choice.
Yeah,
it is. It's no less possible to make the next good choice than it was to make the last good choice. But we just give this freedom of like, do you really think you're going to be perfect?
Mm-hmm.
That's in our culture, bro. It's so messed up because yeah, you can be perfect. It's just the next good choice. Don't fail yourself, bro. Normally people don't want to fail other people when you're late to work. It's absolutely awful. You failed your whole team. You failed your company. It sucks.
Yeah.
It's horrible. We can identify with that, but don't fail yourself. That's why it's trending right now with all this, like make your bed that's all over YouTube and everything like that. Like, hey man, make your bed. It's because it's the first chance you have to make a good choice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's the first chance you have to accomplish anything.
Yeah.
So it's not so much that you made your bed. It's that you didn't make your bed.
Right.
If you didn't, then you've just failed the first thing that you could do that day. Good luck. Have a great day today, but you just made your first failure.
Yeah. That's a very good point. I guess with fitness in general, at what point is enough? When do you kind of be like, oh, maybe I'm too buff? How does it translate to like the right decision for you now is to back off? Or do you think you arrived there?
It's the goals that you have for yourself, first of all, and it progresses, transforms and stuff like that. I mean, I didn't start this journey like wanting to put as much time in as I did. It actually started with wanting to do something rather than nothing.
Sure.
So I had to figure out why I wasn't doing the something, which was just about like starting to use my muscles again and feel good about my muscles and know that they're there and get stronger and stuff like that. And I just wanted that again because I'd spent a fair amount of time doing that earlier in life. I had just be real honest with myself and say, what's the deal, man? First of all, it's like, I don't want to go to a gym. There's no way. There's no way I'm going to take time away from my family, 2-hour trip where I got to convince myself to go, drive there, work out, get dressed. No, bro, it's not going to work. Mm-hmm. So I had a Bowflex, just playing around on that. I had to find amount of time that I was willing to commit to that I wouldn't turn down. Mm-hmm. So I want a workout that I could basically do maybe 5 to 7 minutes. Mm-hmm. My family didn't know I was gone. As a father, especially as an early father, you're trying to give equal effort, right? So when you step away and you know you've stepped away and they know you've stepped away, mm-hmm. it's unsaid, but there's this imbalance that occurs. I wanted to make it feel like I didn't disappear. Yeah. And like 5 to 7 minutes felt like an amount of time where I could actually go downstairs and like sit on the couch and then come back upstairs and nobody would ask me questions about where I was. I was still accessible. The things that I could do in that amount of time that would make me feel good about doing something rather than nothing, but not separate myself from what I was most responsible for.
Right.
And that really developed into me spending more time to where it gets to the point where it's like, okay, Mountain, now this is a 20-minute workout. So I tell my wife, I'll back up in like 20 minutes. Yeah. No big deal. And then it turned out to where, bro, I'm down there for an hour, you know, and it's like something we both do. And I have like the full Bowflex dumbbells and, you know, I still do all that stuff working out of my house. It's just about figuring out what works well for you and what your goals are. So your goals transform over time. But I would say before anything, it really has nothing to do with like the working out and stuff like that. I mean, that is a way to burn calories and stuff. Has everything to do with what you eat.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely nutrition. Everything to do with what you eat. If you can get a hold of your nutrition, the muscle's already there, dude. The yeah. muscle is there. You just have to reveal it. I remember getting back from like family get togethers and stuff like that. And my mom would say, yeah, Kathy said that you just got to tell that boy to eat. And I'm just like, the hell are you talking back about? Off, like, Kathy. I'm like, you don't know what I'm capable of. Like, yeah. I'm freaking strong. I feel better than I ever have. Who are you to tell me that I need to eat more?
Yeah.
They're just like, oh my gosh, you're so skinny. It's like, no, dude, I just don't have any stored fat.
Yeah.
Hey man, I got a month worth of stored up fat here. Just yeah. waiting for that time when I go on a trip somewhere and I don't want to eat anything for 30 days.
Next Maybe. Contestant on Survivor.
Like we were built so that we could store up fat because there's times when
they eat when
we wouldn't
there.
Be able to eat as much. Yeah. But hey bro, newsflash, that's not like that anymore.
No.
So we don't need to store fat anymore. First we need to bring it back to square one where we don't have a bunch of stored fat.
Mm-hmm.
And then we can go find that maintenance level where you're staying right there.
Yeah.
Dude, the indicator is if you're gaining weight. If you're gaining weight, hey man, you're eating too much food and you don't need that stored fat. So why are you gaining it? What are you doing?
I'm gearing up for winter hibernation.
So, but those are the kind of things that go through my head that make it irrational to put on weight. We look up to these pictures in magazines and these people in movies and shows and stuff and say, oh my gosh, it's so shredded. But when you get lean like that in real life, people talk smack sometimes.
Yeah, exactly. It's like people don't want to believe that it's attainable at your level where you're just doing it at home. You got a little bit of equipment. You started with allocating a little bit of time here and there mm-hmm. and you paid attention to your diet. People almost want you to fail. It's crazy that we're wired that way. But
well, we all do it. We all compare ourselves constantly with other people. And mm-hmm. like a person that's just got it all together. And then like, we just pick them apart so that we feel better about ourselves. It's an awful part of the human condition for sure.
Yes.
But we all do it.
Kind of switching gears in past episodes, we've had, you know, Cody King, Kyle Garrett, they've all spoken like very highly of you in the podcast, but living far away from all these people, and maintaining quality relationships has to be challenging, especially being a father and a husband. How do you make the time to continue to pour into those relationships?
It's not the amount of time for sure. It's the value of the time spent. 17 years, I could say that I have really been on a path of trying to be the best version of myself.
Yeah.
I have got nothing to hide. You become very real in conversation. Mm-hmm. You like who you are. So it matters less what people think about who you are.
Sure.
So you watch less what you say. You're not so worried about what you say, because if they didn't like what you said, tough.
Yeah.
Because there's no way I'm going to allow you to influence what I think of myself, mm-hmm. because I spend a lot of time, every moment of every day, being the version of myself that I am happy with. I think that's what it is. It's that when we do spend the time together, there's not a whole lot of small talk. You get into this vulnerable spot real deep and real fast. You start wearing your humanity out there, mm-hmm. to where all can see. Never talk about what's awesome. And I almost always talk about what's really hard right now.
Yeah.
If you want a good conversation, you don't say what's going good right now. You say, what are you really struggling with right now?
Yeah.
Better yet, you say, here's what I'm really struggling with right now.
Yeah.
And your relationships will be so much more deep and fruitful than if you just talked about what you're like super stoked about right now.
Yeah.
That's kind of Instagram.
Exactly. Save that stuff for Instagram. What's really going on? I want the depth. Right. I really don't like jumping from one person to another, mm-hmm. saying, hey, how's it going? Good. Good. How are you? Awesome. Cheers.
Right.
I, not that I don't like the people I'm experiencing when that happens, but my personality just can't enjoy that.
Sure.
It can't enjoy it.
Well, dude, this has been freaking awesome. So thank you for giving us all this time. We really appreciate it.
So, bro, if you could give just one piece of advice to our barista audience or our audience in general, what would it be?
You need to really be able to visualize and materialize the person that you want to be. Start to identify the people you migrate towards, the kind of characters in movies and books that you adore. What are the qualities about the people that you are drawn to, mm-hmm. is the reason that you're drawn to them.
Yeah.
And then once you have a really good idea, really do something about it. And it's not fun, but the end result is a joy and a peace that is actually like the secret to life. It's a long process, but the goal is to get to the end of every day and be proud of the person that you were that day. For me, I'm a disciple. I'm a son of an all-powerful God, the creator of everything. I'm his son, and I've got to live that well, and I've got to prove it every day.
Yeah.
And I'm a husband, I'm a father, and then I'm a leader for those around me. Yeah. When I get to the end of the day, if I can look back on my day and see the things throughout the day where I have proven that to myself and everyone around me, those four things, then it was a great day.
Yep.
Yeah. And where I have failed, prepare so that I don't make that same mistake tomorrow. You can't leave those things that you're not happy with unattended to. You have to do something about it. It's super simple, but it takes the rest of your life.
Yeah. No quick fix. Dude, great advice.
And thank you, bro.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, dude. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thanks for giving me the opportunity. And Shane, let's hit it up. Let's get you 2019 shredded.
Dude, ooh. I'm so down. I'm so down.
Yeah. Dutch Nation, thanks again. Jimmy Crocker, Wenatchee.
Much love, bro.
Thanks, Jimmy.
Amen, brother. Love it. Thanks, guys. Love you.
Love you, bro.
All right. Well, there we have it. Jimmy Crocker, quality stuff. Figure out those weaknesses and have that vigilance like he talked about to be able to overcome it. Be the best version of you. Jimmy figured it out and he's killing the game. Really appreciated him taking the time to share that. I could take a lot from that. I want to identify what's going on with me and be the version of me that I want to be. So, until next time, take it easy, Dutch Nation.